That's nice and patriotic. Recording.
Recording.
Mom's Basement, episode 7.
Yep. Yes, Mom's Basement, episode 7. You dropped the ball again, man.
Mom's Basement.
Oh, that was weak. That was
Mom's
weak.
Mom's Basement.
It's just not in you anymore, man.
No, it's not. I'm losing it.
You're just losing it. We're only 7 episodes in, and one of them didn't even get published.
Yeah.
So today, we're talking about Game Chef 2010.
Yep, September 10th, and they just announced the
They just put the ingredients online.
Yep.
The theme and the ingredients. Now,
well, let's start off by saying what the theme and ingredients are.
Okay.
Game Chef. I'll just read it verbatim. 2010 theme. Game Chef 2010 is officially known as Game Chef Sojourner.
Oh, boy.
And the theme is journey.
Should be Game Chef Sojourner Truth.
Yeah, it should. As always, feel free to interpret that however you like, and we certainly will be doing that. The ingredients are city, desert, edge, and skin.
And we have to use 3 out of 4.
3 out of 4 of them.
So, I mean, these ingredients just went online, what, 20 minutes ago, half an hour ago?
Yeah, it may have been. I haven't been really checking today, but... Well, I checked earlier, but... Yeah,
but
so...
Maybe it's just my associational way of thinking.
Yeah, maybe it's just me, but...
But this is the eve of September 11th.
Right.
And, you know, there's something I've always thought about that I've been thinking about for a long time.
What's that?
Which was you know what it is. The similarity between contemporary acts of terrorism,
Roger,
and Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey. If you think about it, or any hero journey, any depiction.
Well,
of
how do you mean?
Don't give me that voice, man. Well, think about it, right? So, in all versions of the story, you have this kid.
Right.
He's living in abject poverty, yeah, under the rule of some kind of...
He's living under duress in some way, not necessarily poverty.
Often poverty, but living some way under duress, under the influence of some foreign empire, usually. You know,
right,
some dark imperial force,
right,
that's distant from him, but that,
right,
is oppressing his family, his,
right,
you know, making his life miserable.
Yeah.
An old man finds him, or some old scholarly figure finds him, some...
Yeah.
Person of influence and authority, and takes him in, pulls him away from his community, trains him,
and then sends him out into the world.
Well, trains him in a very particular way, gives him access to this kind of mystical spiritual,
right,
knowledge,
right,
and fills him with a sense of purpose,
right,
and then sends him out to fight against this, you know, this great imperial force, the,
right,
the empire, or the, you know, or you know, the dark tower of Saruman or whatever, but,
right,
this evil, powerful force. And then this guy goes out, he endures trials, he has to travel a great distance from his own, he endures all kinds of trials, and at the end, he's maybe asked to make a great sacrifice. Well, he's going to be asked to make some kind of sacrifice, but he may even be asked to martyr himself.
Right.
Now, doesn't that to you sound like...
Sounds a lot like...
A kid growing up in some third world country who's,
right,
taken aside by a cleric, even. A cleric,
a
the mullah, same word.
A cleric, yeah.
Yeah, an imam, but a cleric.
Right.
And a cleric has the fantasy implications,
yeah,
also.
That's true.
And... taken aside, taken to training camp, a special school, where he's taught, you know, the tools of the trade. And he's also, exactly, instilled with a faith, given some kind of spiritual knowledge.
Yep.
And then he's sent to the land of his oppressors.
Because it's spiritual warfare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it is in the hero's journey, too.
Right.
And then he's sent to, you know, somewhere in the first world, the empire.
Yep.
And he's asked to make a great sacrifice.
Martyrdom.
Martyrdom, exactly. It's,
yep,
martyrdom in both cases.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, and that's it being the, you know, September 11th Eve,
yeah,
I guess, and Game Chef coming up with those components, journey, like hero's journey, and then,
yeah,
city, thinking of, you know, what's the most iconic
city
in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And then desert, well...
Yeah.
You know, you think of the Middle East.
Yep. Edge.
Edge extremism.
Yep. The edge of sanity. The edge.
The fringe,
of
being on
reason.
The fringe of, you know, social and cultural discourse.
Yep.
And then, I mean, we don't even need skin. We only have to use 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, somehow, we make a game that that combines the hero's journey with contemporary terrorism.
Yes.
But that's all I got so far.
Yeah, see...
Dead air.
Dead air, dead air, dead air.
But, I mean, how would we do it mechanically? I guess that's the question.
I don't know. Well, we got to think about what is the game going to portray? Like, what part of the hero's journey? Is it going to be the entire hero's journey?
You could... There's a few questions here. Number one is this going to be a fantasy game that has some implication of contemporary terrorism?
Right.
Like a fantasy game that is structured in a way that makes you think of the behavior of a 21st century terrorist, or is this going to be a game set in the 21st century,
right,
you know, dealing with, you know, radicalism, dealing with terrorism, dealing with,
yeah,
you know, some kind of fringe group,
yeah,
that happens to be structured in the manner of the hero's journey? You could really go two ways with that.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what you want to be overt and out front and what you want to be the subtext.
That.
Could go either way with that. Oh, by the way, in case our listeners are wondering, all 0 of our listeners are wondering 0. Where Mike is, he's not here tonight.
He'll probably have some World of Warcraft stuff to deal with.
Yes, real serious business stuff.
Serious.
He will probably be back
on the next one.
On the next episode, on episode 8.
Yep.
Gary, who you may remember from last episode, is here.
He's... Say hello, Gary. He doesn't get it.
Today's a quiet day for Gary. Yeah. He's watching anime on his computer.
Yep.
But anyway.
So the hero's journey.
You could go either way with that, really.
Yeah. I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both ways. But I think it really comes down to what do we think would be the most fun to do.
I think either would be
either would be fun. Really fun.
I mean, honestly, I would play either of those games.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think we have played both of those games in one way or another in the past. Now, the former idea, the fantasy world, you know, that implies sort of contemporary events, that implies, you know, modern cultural and class warfare is something I've always wanted to write about, you know,
right,
in a fictional sense.
Right.
I think you could, but either one, I think you could design a game around. In fact, you could design a game that does both. Of course, I already, you know, that has both a fantasy and a real life component.
Kind of like Escapist.
Like Escapist. If you guys are wondering what Escapist is, see episode 3.
Yep, episode 3 was where we explained.
But that's a game where you have parallel universes, you know, one real-world universe and one fantasy universe.
Mm.
You could design a game using this theme that does that. In fact, you could use the Escapist rules to run that game.
To run it, that's
but
true.
This is Game Chef. We're supposed to come up with a completely new game, so maybe we don't want to do that.
Yep. Well, actually, the only rule for Game Chef is that there's nothing previously written.
Okay.
So for Escapist, we could actually use the full rule set and just write
that's
it down.
That's true, because I never actually wrote it down.
Recorded.
That's true.
Anyway,
Moot,
he says
finally an advantage to my way of designing games.
Yeah. He says right in here that basically you can't check and confirm any of that stuff anyway. So.
Right. But I mean, we want to be above board here.
Oh, yeah. But nope, it's 100% fresh. It's not written down, so.
That's true. But I mean, we should go all out here and make a new game.
That's true.
Well, which of those two? You said there were advantages and disadvantages to both. Can you think of any of those advantages or disadvantages?
Well, the advantage to a fantasy setting might be that some people who have a tough time dealing with the straight September 11th type of, you know,
people who find that traumatic or offensive.
Horrible, yeah.
Yeah.
Might have a little bit easier time dealing with the
right,
aspects of the narrative.
And then they might be able to better understand the original source material of something of September 11th. It might give them... Because most people, a lot of people living in the first world can't put themselves into the shoes
that,
of, you know,
Al-Qaeda terrorist.
An Al-Qaeda terrorist or a Somali pirate or anyone who, these people that are cultural villains, you know.
Yeah.
And this would be a way, if you did it in a fantasy world and removed that kind of baggage, that real world baggage, it might be a way for them to, you know, step over that line and begin to associate with the mindset of these other peoples.
Hmm.
So that's true. You could set it.
The obvious disadvantage of that is things like that have been done similarly, although not necessarily with the September 11th thing in mind.
Right.
But I think they've been, you know, things where you have a fantasy world that helps people sort of deal with.
Well, escapist, for one. But those, like, you're thinking of, like, Road to Terabithia or something,
that,
right?
Yeah.
Or Chronicles of Narnia.
Or Pan's Labyrinth.
Or Pan's Labyrinth, kind of, where
the fantasy world is world kind of tapestry overlaid.
Right, exactly.
The corpse of real life.
Yeah, where it's a way of dealing with real life, real life situations that are too difficult to comprehend.
Right.
Or a way of, in the case of something like Chronicles of Narnia, taking a real life faith and offering it in a fantastical way.
And a bunch of allegory and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So how about the terrorist thing, the advantage to that? Well,
the advantage to using the real world,
the real
setting
world,
and just using the hero's journey as a structural framework.
I think the advantage to that is it most definitely really hasn't been done so much, certainly not in the 9/11.
Have there ever been any indie games about terrorist attacks or about...
Well, actually...
Fringe or extremist groups, even like IRA or...
Not extremist groups, but actually there was one done, I think it was called Thou Art But a Warrior. It was done from the perspective of Muslim crusaders during the Crusades or Muslim knights during the Crusades.
Okay, defending...
Fanatically defending Jerusalem from...
But, I mean, that's not really...
I don't think that's necessarily in the same vein.
Not at all. I mean, it is in the same vein in the sense that it's putting you into the mindset of, you know, one of our cultural enemies.
That, yeah.
You know, instead of... Because all of these games set during the Middle Ages, if they even deal with the Crusades, you're dealing with the European perspective, you know.
Exactly,
the Knights Templar.
It's a different
perspective.
And these
good Christian knights who are going into the Middle East to take it back from the evil Muslim. But... You don't usually have that other perspective, you know, that other cultural perspective.
Right.
And the interesting thing is, at that point in time, you know, the people who were, the Islamic knights who were holding Jerusalem, they were the culturally developed ones, you know,
right.
They were the ones who was the seat of culture and civilization.
It's kind of the
time.
Christian barbarians.
Yeah, and we, exactly, that's what I was going to say. We were the barbarians at the gate in that situation, yeah. Well, that's true, but that's still distant past. I mean, there's been plenty of games about World War II.
Sure.
And, you know, once you get past a certain 40 or 50-year mark, stuff that was, you know, important at that time and maybe offensive at that time suddenly becomes fair game.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been many games dealing with contemporary terrorism.
No. The obvious disadvantages of that,
well,
I think we talked about
many people would not want to play that game.
That's the whole thing.
I would
want to play that game.
I would, well, I proposed that game, so obviously
I would definitely want to play that game.
And I know our group would play it. If Mike was here, he'd be like, yeah, I want to play that game.
Exactly.
Gary, would you play that game, Gary?
Okay.
Game about contemporary terrorists going and basically starting shit in the West.
Maybe.
So that's
amazing.
Gary's on the fence.
Yeah.
Gary's on. He would play that game if we asked him.
He'd probably play that game, right?
Brandon? I don't know. Brandon might be like, oh, guys, I don't know about
that.
No,
I think
people. Well, he'd play the game and then he'd tell his friends he didn't play it.
That's it.
But,
the other disadvantage is something that maybe, I'm not sure how much it would come out, but when you do real life stuff, there's an actual ambulance
outside.
Holy shit. There it goes.
You just can't help but be drawn to that. It's like phototropism.
I know.
You're just totally drawn to the flashing lights. But anyway.
One thing about it is when you do real-life source material, there's a question about how much depth you have to the real-life source material to do right. justice to it.
Right.
In other words, to have it historically
accurate.
You mean
the level of historical detail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of designers, I've heard from some design podcasts, that people kind of struggle with that in some ways. You know, how much to put in the manual so that
people feel like...
And then there's people, from a player's perspective, there's, you know, the idea of how do I play this and do justice. It's like, am I playing this right,
right,
or am I, you know...
That's true.
That kind of thing.
And that's another advantage that fantasy has.
Right.
Is you're always in the right, you know, it's fantastical,
exactly.
it's not real.
Even if you just want to make, you know, casual allusions to something, you're always kind of...
Right, you're safe. You're in a
yeah.
safe zone because
right.
it's still a different world and what you're depicting is still accurate
exactly.
you know, for the purposes of that world.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's true. Doing research for a real-world terrorism game.
Yeah.
You know, you game theft.
Game Chef?
Game Chef, yeah. Game Chef, how much are you limited to? Like 10 days?
It's September 11th to the 19th.
So less than that, a week. You
right.
know, a week.
Yeah.
So a week isn't that much time to do the research necessary.
That's true, yeah.
Those are two definite different options, though.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you have any thoughts on what you'd like to see?
I don't know. I'm just not sure what I want to see mechanically from...
Mechanics is another issue. Because,
yeah.
of course, nothing in that list gives us any hint about mechanics.
Yeah, mechanics, right.
And how you would handle mechanics in a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we want Campbell's hero's journey to somehow have mechanical significance.
Right. I was thinking of maybe using that to frame the scenes, like each scene is a different part of the hero's journey.
Mm.
And then during those scenes, you have certain mechanical weight paid, or attention paid to certain mechanical things based on what step along the journey
what
it is.
What step along the journey it is. That makes sense.
But other than that, I really don't have any... I really don't have too much idea mechanically.
Right.
The big question is dice or no dice. Although, I mean, obviously when you make these kind of games, the decision should be from perspective of, you know, does it fit the game or not.
Right,
does,
right.
But I personally, I don't know, I don't really go for the dice.
I don't go for the dice generally if it can be avoided. I think the question then, is this a cooperative game or is this a competitive game?
Right.
Do you have one group of players playing the... You know, the terrorists and another group playing the Empire or the West.
The antagonists, yeah.
Right?
Kinda.
And, or do you...
Because obviously the terrorists would be the protagonists.
Right,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, they have to be.
Yeah.
For all of, you know, they'd be, they're the heroes.
They're
the
heroes
in the hero's journey.
Exactly,
yeah. But, because if you have a competitive game, then the mechanics need to be stronger. Because
right.
the mechanics have to provide game balance.
Right.
But if this is a game where... Everyone is going to be playing heroes / terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't need that much mechanical strength because everyone's sort of on the same
on
side.
The same page.
And in fact, since the hero's journey is going to, in some way, script where the game is going,
right.
you may not need a particularly strong, heavy mechanical base then.
Right.
Since it's almost on rails in a sense already, since the hero's
right.
journey provides the story arc. Or the
right.
game. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if we're going to use the hero's journey structurally, like you said, then we almost want to do the contemporary terrorist game with the hero's journey serving as subtext.
Right.
And you might even come up with new terms for the steps in the hero's journey.
Sure.
Or with little descriptions of how it could be played out in, you know, contemporary... Excuse me, in a way that makes sense in contemporary society, like, trying to think of a step.
Kind of like coming of age, or...
Right, coming of age might be the moment when you're indoctrinated into the terrorist training
right.
camp or something. Or the encounter with the old man would be the encounter with the imam
right.
or the cleric.
Right.
And there's other... Of course, the hero's journey has a strong female component, too, like... You have the goddess in there, and you have the you have woman as goddess, and then you have woman as
seductress.
Seductress, excuse me. Yeah, So you have to find a way to work in that female element also.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. Of course, you wouldn't have to use every step of the hero's journey. You might.
Yeah, you could clip out what you
fact,
need.
In fact, would do you imagine this as a game that would be played in one session, like you'd go through the whole hero's journey in a single sitting? Or do you imagine it as the hero's journey frames a campaign? And then you might even have individual sessions devoted to different steps.
I think we'd be almost better off doing a single session type of deal. One, because with a difficult source material, maybe people may not want to play it for more than one session. But also because I think it'd be interesting to have that whole journey played out throughout an entire 3-hour session or something.
Do you think that you can squeeze that whole journey into 3 hours?
See, I don't know. Maybe if we just focus on the parts where
there's clear overlap.
Yeah, and they're most interesting.
Right, right. Yeah. So focus on... I wish we had the sort of Hero's Journey wiki article or a copy of Hero with 1,000 Faces in front of us.
Yeah.
How far are we into this podcast? I know you had wanted it to be a shorter one.
Yeah, I think we're still...
Oh, by the way, thank you to Ryan Macklin for listing our podcast. I know we kind of made light of him a little bit in the last episode, but he definitely came through for us, so thanks.
Thanks, Ryan. My mom's not going to hurt me anymore.
No, she's not. Well, at least not about this anyway.
Yeah, my mom is a harsh woman. You actually may have just saved me from a beating.
His mom actually is a pretty harsh woman. I don't imagine her as much of a beater, but... Yes, anyway.
So here we have the hero's journey pulled up on Wiki.
That's kind of a...
It's kind of goofy.
You've got an image pulled up here. Let's see if we can get to the actual text of the article. There we go. Wow, this laptop is from like 1996. And
probably about there.
It's got the little nub instead of the pad mount. What do you call the...
I don't know.
But anyway, okay. Let's look at these. Scrolling up. What would normally take...
Oh, here it is.
Oh, it's down there. Ah, now we're back. Yeah. I'm not using this. We need Mike or someone to bring a little bit of levity to this podcast. I feel like this has been a pretty dry, serious cast.
Yeah.
I feel like the jokey, less,
Don't worry, next podcast we'll return to our normal, you know...
jokey format.
Yeah, with like
the irreverence
and all that stuff.
With what?
Penis jokes and all that.
Do we really need the penis jokes?
Yeah, we do. They're a critical part of
it. Are they a critical part of our podcast?
Yeah.
Listeners, let us know. Penis jokes, stay or go?
Yeah.
Do you think they're a fundamental part of our structure?
I think the penis jokes have to be in there, honestly.
Hmm.
Anyway, for the stages, it's 17 of them, so I don't know if we'll have time to...
But aren't they? They're broken into a few big ones, right?
Right.
Like Departure.
You have Departure.
And then, what is it?
Crossing the first... Oh, Initiation.
Oh, yeah, right. Departure, Initiation. And then there's something and Return.
The Return.
Oh, maybe it's just Departure, Initiation, and Return.
Yep.
Now, Return may not be too relevant to this game.
But
but
it's just like, I mean, if you think about Lord of the Rings, like, Frodo and those guys, Frodo and Sam, when they went to take the ring, Gandalf, you know, knew maybe they might not come back. You know?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
In fact, he didn't expect them to come back.
No
expect
one really
them
expected
really
them
die.
To come back. And they didn't expect
they didn't
to come
expect,
back either.
Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, if they hadn't been saved by the eagles, they would have been
they
killed.
They wouldn't come
they would
back.
Have died on Mount Doom.
Except there are no eagles in the...
The real world.
In the real world to
no
pull people out of the plane before it goes into the World Trade Center.
Yeah, or to... pull them out of the vest before it goes off?
Yeah, that.
But so, seriously, guys, moment of silence for the victims lost to 9/11.
Fucking moment of silence.
Dead air. But yeah.
Dead air, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what we're thinking preliminarily for, I don't know, if anybody listening who might be listening to our podcast
who
has
didn't
any...
just turn it off who didn't during just that turn last that... couple of moments.
Yeah. If anybody has any, I don't know, maybe suggestions or you want to throw out some things that you might think about our idea.
Yeah, give us some feedback here. Give us some real hard mechanics we could use to shape this thing, because that seems to be the problem.
Yeah.
Or give us your rants, you know?
Yeah.
Tell us why you're so offended.
Say we're a bunch of dickheads for joking about the World Trade Center or whatever.
Right. I mean, when does it become okay? Does it never become okay?
Oh, it's never okay.
I mean, we're almost 10 years after the incident.
Yeah.
And people are already upset because they want to build a mosque, which is actually a cultural center, two blocks away, where it wouldn't even be remotely visible from ground zero. Yeah.
Just to make things topical, what's your stance on the mosque building? Since we have... Oh, we got about 5 minutes left. What's your stance on the mosque building deal? Mm-hmm. Just real quick.
Your stance?
Yeah. What's your stance?
Oh, you're asking me my stance?
Yeah.
I don't know. Erect, arms raised.
Is it a combat stance or a defensive stance? Or is it like the Final Fantasy 13, where there's like 20 different stances? Like there's like. Debuff stance.
No, there's six.
Oh, there's six? Is that it?
Six per character.
Oh, okay.
Gary offering what some are the factual stances? Information.
There's Commando, Sentinel.
Commando, yes.
I love how we went from what's your stance on the Ground Zero Hunter Moss to what are the different stances in Final Fantasy.
I think my stance on the mosque at Ground Zero is Saboteur. Either that or Commando.
Can I step? I don't know. Is there a?
I think yours should be. I don't know.
Spell casting stance. Is there a
Chanter?
Synergist.
Yeah.
Okay.
That seems like because you tend to blend both the views.
I don't really. Sometimes I mean. I'm not strictly left or right on any given issue, but on this issue, I think. Really. That the people who are protesting the mosque are being, the cultural center, are being pretty fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid.
I think it's a profoundly stupid point of view. Because if they, now, let's imagine that I'm someone who sees Ground Zero as a sacred site, and you'd have to take a real leap there. Then I'd say, okay, if they were actually going to, like, erect a minaret, you know, right over the ashes of some...
Where people got vaporized.
Right, exactly. You know, if they're going to sweep up some accountant or hedge fund manager's ashes and then erect a minaret right there,
right.
I would say, maybe a little tasteless. No more tasteless than this podcast. Maybe a little tasteless. But to say, I would like to build a place for Muslims to worship two blocks away from... Or basically anywhere in downtown Manhattan, and to be like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, do these people think that there are not Muslims living and worshiping in Manhattan? Do they think that's not happening? Do they think they're just going to swarm in upon the city because they build the cultural center there? I mean, it's ridiculous. Gary Bander, come over here for a second.
Why?
Tell us what you think about the Ground Zero Mosque.
We will not discuss that.
He's not. Gary, as you know from listening to the last podcast, not someone who likes to talk about controversial topics.
No. Absolutely not.
No, he's not someone to ever say anything that might offend someone.
Never.
Or to interrupt a podcast by rubbing his nipples audibly.
You should rub your nipples again so people can hear it.
No. I respectfully decline.
He respectfully declines. Is this Gary?
Huh.
Okay. Well,
he's watching Bleach. But anyway, my stance on it is basically the same. If they want to build it there, I mean, really, who gives a fuck type of thing? I mean, I know some people think it's insensitive because, like, 3,000 people got vaporized there. But it's like, would you rather McDonald's or something?
Yeah, exactly.
people eating burgers, you know, when they...
Right. But the 3,000 people didn't get even get vaporized on that spot. You know, this is two blocks away. And there is a McDonald's probably right across the road.
Yeah, it's probably right across the fucking
and a falafel stand and a Starbucks. Yeah. And I mean, all those things. Those things aren't making downtown Manhattan any less sacred. I mean, and there's probably, you know, a you know, titty theater or something down the street, right down the street from Ground Zero. You know,
would you go down on me in a theater?
Last time I was there, and it's been a few years since I was in New York City, or at least on the spot.
What?
But last time I was there, there were people selling for profit,
right,
selling collections of photographs of the event. You know, right in front of Ground Zero. Right. You know, people hawking like commemorative mugs with like
you gotta have the
big
t-shirt
explosion on it. You know, and the plane going into the tower.
Yeah,
and I don't hear anyone on the radio or on television saying, "Oh my God, that's disgusting."
Right.
But I don't know.
And to sort of bring it back around to the game, mm-hmm. you know, to anyone who would say too soon for a game or too soon, not appropriate, that kind of thing. I mean, it's like you look at other art forms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying game design is an art form. That's a different argument. But you look at other forms of media.
Right.
And, you know, they're making 9/11 movies.
Books.
Adam Sandler was just in one. They had United 93.
Yeah, United 93. Stuff. The one with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle in it.
Yeah.
The Oliver Stone's World Trade Center.
Yeah, World Trade Center, yeah.
People have
I mean, you got a bunch of basically people taking, you know, taking advantage of the source material. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really too soon or offensive or anything
else.
No,
and I mean, certainly books.
Right.
Songs. A ton of songs.
Oh, there's a ton of songs. That's true. But yeah, boom. That's our Game Chef idea.
Yeah, please. Give us some feedback. Even if it's just to post and say, you guys
fuck
are
you
disgusting.
Guys.
I'm offended.
Yeah.
Go fry in hell.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, just even a short
just let us know you're listening. We're that desperate for attention.
If we don't get four listeners by tonight, my mom is going to take out the belt, and my dad is going to hold me down, and I'm going to be beaten.
Your dad would never hold me down.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't give a shit.
He'd sit there, stand there and chuckle about it.
Yep. But yeah, that's Mom's Basement Podcast.
Episode 7.
Mom's
Game
Basement.
Chef 2010.
Yes, sir.
Also, let us know your Game Chef chef ideas.
Sure.
If you send us some good ones, maybe we'll put them on the next podcast because, you know, we're so selective about our content.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's it, I guess.
Stop listening.